Good morning. How are we doing? Great. Good. I heard like one great, which is awesome. You know, great. Hey, I like it too. Come on there. Great. Hey, so Daniel chapter one is where we're going to be this morning. My name is George Jacobus, and I have the privilege of being with you guys for the next 3 weeks. So today's a test run. You got two other options. If you don't like it, you can go to Anderson or Southwood. But I hope to see you back here next week as we go through some Old Testament characters. But I was a college pastor at Central for 8 years and then worked at the Flipping Group for 5 years and now get to work as in an investment group that we have. But graduated from Southwestern Seminary, been married to a Longhorn for 18 years. Hey, don't hiss. Like, that's okay. You know, it kind of is what it is. Following us around, I guess, everywhere. Anyway, a little SEC joke. But Daniel chapter 1 is where we're going to be. Hey, so a few weeks ago, or a couple months ago now, but at this point, I wrote this at Anderson. So a couple months ago now, my kids and my wife went to Walmart, and they came home with some ice cream, 2 half gallons to be precise. But they were great value ice cream. It was great value ice cream. And nothing against generic foods. I actually like and think that you can, you know, have some generic foods, but we need to have standards in our house. And so anyway, my kids scoop out this cookies and cream ice cream and they begin to eat this ice cream. And then I did not partake because I do have standards. But they were bringing their bowls back to the sink. And one of my kids said, "You know what, Dad? Like, I like this ice cream more than Blue Bell." I immediately rebuked her, sat her in the corner, told her to think about what she just said right there, because there is a gold standard of ice cream we have in the state of Texas. It's not Blue Bunny, it's not Ben and Jerry's, it's not Haagen-Dazs, it's Blue Bell ice cream. Homestyle vanilla, mint chocolate chip if you're feeling a little crazy, if you want to have a party, you know, get some cookie two-step, whatever it is. But that is the standard. And so my daughter comes to me and says, "Hey, I like this more than I like the standard." And I immediately tell her, "Hey, we've got to fix this problem. We've got to go to Walmart, get the real ice cream, bring it home, because there's one ice cream that we eat in this house, sister." It just seemed a little upside down, doesn't it? Like, it just doesn't seem quite right. You know, like UT and OU coming to the SEC. Just doesn't feel quite right. Doesn't fit the narrative that we want in our life, right? I can say that because I've got a Longhorn wife, and that's fine. But there are times in life that things just don't seem right. They seem upside down, don't they? A couple months ago, a friend called me and asked me to do a funeral for his brother, 49 years old. My grandmother had 4 kids, and she buried 2 of them while she was alive. And so I remember after the second one, I asked, how's Granny doing? And my dad said, "Hey, it's just not how it's supposed to be. Parents aren't supposed to watch their kids pass away." And for a moment, like, it just, like, life seemed upside down a little bit. It just didn't feel right like it should. And if you look at our culture over the last 18 months, it feels like things that we knew have almost just been upended on itself. Things that we thought, "Hey, this is how our country works. This is how I live my life. This is a rhythm and routine that I find myself in," just felt turned upside down in the middle of a pandemic. And the reason I say that is because we find Daniel in the same particular situation. You see, Daniel is not a book where there's active persecution against Christians or Jews at the time. Like, Daniel finds himself in a new city because King Nebuchadnezzar from Babylon has overpowered Jerusalem, has taken that city and began to gut it of all of its resources. He took the money, he took the cattle, the livestock, all the wealth, including the best and the brightest people from Jerusalem, and he moves them to Babylon. And Daniel, as well as some other people, find themselves inside the king's court, with a world that just maybe feels a little upside down, like it's not how it's supposed to be. And in the middle of that situation, in the middle of that circumstance, we see Daniel make some decisions that are different than what the people and the culture tells him to make. But he does it in a way where he pursues wisdom. And my hope for us is that we will look at Daniel chapter 1, and then we'll see the wisdom, how Daniel pursued wisdom, and then we in our life can pursue that same wisdom. So look at Daniel chapter 1, starting in verse 8. But Daniel resolved. Now, if you'd like to write in your Bible, underline the word resolved. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord, the king, who assigned your food and your drink. For why should he see that you are in worse condition than he, than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king. Then Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and those are Daniel's friends, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink, and then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them and tested them for 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and wine that they were drinking and gave them vegetables. And now the whole food plant-based diet was started. Right here. All right? This is the beginning of it. Right here. Right now. So the interesting word, like the third word in, is very interesting to me because it's the word resolved. That word resolved in the Hebrew means a deliberate act of the will motivated by a personal conviction. So a deliberate act motivated by a personal conviction. But what I find interesting is that Daniel's 15 to 17 years old at this time. You know, and oftentimes we write off youth. Oh, you're 15 years old, you're 16 years old, you're 17 years old. But yet Daniel, who's 15 to 17, has his behavior changed by a deep-seated personal conviction in his life. And so let me tell you, this is a side note in this room, but if you're a student, if you're in high school or middle school, hey, don't think that you're relegated to lead at a later time. This is a 15 to 17-year-old man who's about to be, or is in the king's court, and is about to be elevated because of a deep-seated personal conviction that changed his behavior, that changed what he did. And so let me challenge you, you're not too young to make a difference or an impact. God used Daniel in the same way. But here's what's interesting. He resolved to not defile himself. And that word defiled is only used like 12 times in the Old Testament. And it means to defile yourself or impurity, either morally or ceremonially. And so Daniel looks at the king's food, looks at the meat and the wine, and sees this deep-seated personal conviction in his life and says, hey, it's wise for me not to eat that food. It is best for me not to eat that particular meat or drink that particular wine. Now, why would Daniel do that? Now, scholars have debated this for a long time, but there's like three kind of popular reasons why Daniel would have done that. The first was this, Leviticus chapter 11. Now, Leviticus is the book, if you're reading through the Bible in a year, you get about to Leviticus and you're like, okay, I've had enough of this. Let me skip on and go to the next one. But Leviticus 11 gives us an interesting paradigm here because it says, it walks through several types of animals that are not to be eaten, that are considered unclean in the Jewish faith. Camel, badgers, pigs, rabbits, things in the water that don't have fins or scales, eagles, falcons, ostriches, seagulls, hawks, owls, storks, herons, bats, and the list goes on. And if you want the list, you can see Leviticus chapter 11. It's all there. But one reason that people believe that Daniel said no or rejected the king's food was because he couldn't guarantee that the food would be considered clean. And since there was no guarantee of that, Daniel says, hey, I don't want to be forced to eat this food. Let me drink water and vegetables. So that's the first thing. In light of who God has made me to be, in light of who I am, I'm not going to eat that food. Second thing is this. The food rations could have been associated with idol worship. And Leviticus also talks about food that's related to idol worship, how we shouldn't eat that, and that's considered unclean as well. The problem with that kind of idea is that he still ate the vegetables. So odds are the meat and the vegetables would still be there. But let's just take that for a second. So in light of what surrounds me, in light of where I am, and I don't know if the food is offered to idols or not, I'm choosing not to eat that meat or drink that wine. The third thing, Daniel could have simply interpreted eating the king's food was like, or the royal rations was simply this idea of, hey, I support the king. I support what King Nebuchadnezzar did, how he took over Jerusalem, and now that I'm given these royal rations, I am on board with what the king does. And if Daniel's friends wanted everyone to know that it wasn't the king's food that was going to sustain them. So if you boil those three, like, kind of generally accepted principles about why people believe Daniel rejected the food, it really leads us to three things. If we boil those three things down, it leads us to three questions, maybe. Like, in light of who Daniel is, he's a follower of Yahweh. He's been forgiven his sins, and what's happened on the inside changes the way my life works on the outside. And so because of who I am, is this the wise thing for me to do? I think is the first question Daniel asks himself. The second question, in light of where I am, in light of the fact that I'm in a foreign city, that it's known for its immorality and drunkenness, in light I'm in a place where people might cause me to stumble or people might try to trap me into doing something like we see in the rest of the book of Daniel, is this the wise thing for me to do? So in light of who I am, in light of where he is, and in light of what God has called him to. Now, I don't know if Daniel knows this at the time, but he's about to rise up in the ranks of the king. Like, he's about to be a trusted advisor for King Nebuchadnezzar. And at some point here, like in Daniel chapter 4, King Nebuchadnezzar is going to build this 90-foot golden image of himself. His three friends are going to, you know, not bow down to this idol. And then Daniel is going to ultimately lead King Nebuchadnezzar to faith. And so I believe that Daniel has this sense of calling that's in his life. And he says, in light of what God has called me to, is this the wise thing for me to do? And so if I could phrase it, if I could put those things together, it would be wrapped up like this. The process, I believe, in light of who I am, in light of where I am, and in light of what God has called me to, is this the wise thing for me to do? I think that's the framework that Daniel uses in this particular situation to choose to not eat this food. Now, I believe that that's a framework for us to navigate a culture and navigate situations in our life that are difficult. Like Ephesians 5 says this, 15 and 16, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of your time because the days are evil. So Ephesians 5, Paul's writing to the church in Ephesus, and he says, listen, there are two ways to walk here. There are ways to walk in wisdom, and there are ways to not walk in wisdom. And every day we get up and we are surrounded by what I would consider wisdom issues. Like there are things in life that the Bible speaks directly towards. Marriage is designed to be between one man and one woman. Marriage for a believer is designed to be entered in with another person who believes. Drunkenness, gluttony, crude joking, coveting, the goal of parenting, tithing principles, all these things are like very specifically laid out in the Bible and are for our glory and for our best from God. But then every day there are these wisdom issues like, how do I spend my money? How do I spend my time? What should or shouldn't my kids be involved in? Who exactly do you date? What exactly do you eat? What do you drink? What school should I go to? What job should I have? What ministry? And now that I've overwhelmed all of us, every day we are surrounded by those sorts of decisions. And I've got four kids, and I feel like as they get older, all their problems just get more serious. And so now I'm trying to navigate things for my kids too. And every day I find myself, hey, what is the wisdom? What is the best for us to do? And so the question is, how do we make those same type of wisdom decisions? And I think it's the same way Daniel did. We ask ourselves in light of who we are, in light of where we are, and in light of what God has called us to do, is this the wise thing to do? So let's break that down for a second. In light of who I am, is this the wise thing to do? Like when I think about who we are, like there are really three things that I think of. The first thing, like as a believer, as someone who's put their faith in Jesus, as a believer, and because everyone else around me knows that I'm a believer, is this the wise thing for me to do? So the first thing that, like, as a believer, is this wise? The second thing, when I think about who we are, is our history, like our propensity towards certain things or not. Like in light of my past struggles with money management, is it the wisest thing to open up a credit card and just go shopping? You know, go to St. Marcus and hit Pottery Barn and think about all the money we've saved, right? Is that the wise thing for me to do in light of my past struggles? Or if you're struggling with alcohol, is it the wise thing to put yourself in a situation where you know you'll be tempted over and over and over again? So in light of the fact that we're a believer, in light of our history, and then in light of our current life stage, like I really want to be a good golfer. Like I do. I want to be a scratch golfer. I want to play old man golf, fairways and greens the whole time. I don't have to be the longest driver by any stretch of the imagination, but I want to be really good. The problem is I shoot like a 110 on the golf course. For those of you that don't know golf, it's not bad. It's awful. It's awful. And so the fact that I have four kids and the fact that I want to be good and the fact that I've got 3 years left with my oldest at home is now the best time for me to spend 4 hours on Saturday at the golf course and a couple hours during the week working on my short game. Like the answer is no. Now, I'm not saying golf is bad, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't play golf, and you should not walk out of here thinking, oh, great, I've got to give up my clubs, go to play it against sports, and sell my clubs, and get everything done. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying before you go, you should ask yourself that question. Is this the wise thing for me to do? Is this the best use of my time in my current life stage? Or, like, if you're newly married, you know, and you're just out of the gate as a new family, and you're thinking, hey, you know, when I have kids, I want one of us to stay home. Like, is it the wise thing for us to do to buy that house right now? Or buy that car right now? Or put ourselves in that financial situation? And I'm not saying there's any right or wrong answer. But I'm just saying if we want someone to stay home, then we have to ask ourselves, is this the wise thing for us to do? And I'm just convinced that sometimes in life we make decisions really haphazardly without ever asking the question, is this wise for me? Is this the best use of my time? So in light of who I am, in light of the fact that I'm a believer, my history, my current life stage, is this the wise thing for me to do? It's a question we should ask. But that's the first question that Daniel asks. The second question, in light of where I am, is this the wise thing for me to do? In light of where I am, like in light of where my sphere of influence is, like in light of where I spend most of my time, is this the wise thing for me to do? After I was finished at Central, I started working for a company that required a lot of traveling. And so I would be, you know, especially like in seasons, I would be gone for 3-4 weeks, you know, just home on the weekends. And so a friend of mine called me up one day, didn't ask, just called me up one day and said, hey, George, are you traveling? I go, yeah, it's busy season, Jack. Yeah, I'm traveling. He goes, well, don't go in the hotel bar alone. I was like, okay. He's like, no, I'm serious. Don't go to the hotel bar alone. And I'm like, okay, I got it, Jack. Great. He goes, no, George, listen to me. Do not go to the hotel bar alone. I'm like, Jack, what do you think I'm doing? Like, I'm not doing that right now. He goes, I know, But there will be a temptation, but and the people that are surrounding you could cause you to stumble. And I don't want you to stumble. I don't want you to lose everything. It's a wisdom issue. In light of who is surrounding me, is this the wise thing for me to go spend my time at that place? Or, like now that I've transitioned to, we have a couple companies and these people that work with us, that are on our team, some of them are believers and some aren't. And so in light of who is surrounding me and the influence that I get to have in my sphere, is it the wise thing for me to make this business decision? Is it the wise thing for you to go down this path? Or how do I speak about other team members? Or how do I speak? Is that the wisest thing for me to do? And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer, but in light of who is surrounding you and in light of where you are, is this the wise thing for you to do? Is a question we should ask. We should think about that as we navigate the culture. Should I post that thing? Should I text that thing? I know at my house it's not wise to bring up the Longhorn and Aggies in the SEC. For real, like we were fine. Like in the Big 12, we were all fine. Until the SEC started happening. And then my wife and I, we just started going after it. I can't believe Texas would be that arrogant. How could you think you deserve as much as we are? We're better. You know, all those things. So it's not wise for me to bring that up. I poke the bear a little bit. But maybe I shouldn't. I should ask the question. The last thing. In light of what God has called me to, is this the wise thing for me to do? So I've been inside of vocational ministry, and I've been in the secular world now for 6 years. And a lesson that God has taught me is that the call is really the same. Like Matthew 28 tells us, like, we are to go into the world in our sphere of influence and make disciples. That's what God has called us to do. It starts with our family and our kids, and then it goes on to our coworkers and our team members and people that we work with. In our sphere. And that call is whether or not you preach or teach or lead worship, or it's, whether you're on, an engineer, or whether you're an architect, or whether, you work on a truck or whatever it is. The call is the same, to make disciples. And so in light of the fact that God has called us to make disciples, in light of the fact that God has called me to do this, is this the wise thing for me to do? And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer. I'm just saying we should ask the question. Because I've seen too many people lose their influence by allowing themselves to succumb to what I would consider a wisdom issue. And so the question is, will you ask that question? In light of what God has called me to, is this the wise thing for me to do? We should ask ourselves that. It's the same thing that Daniel asked. But here's what I know. We've got to pursue those questions. Like, we've got to pursue wisdom. It's not like one day you wake up and you're like, oh man, I'm full of wisdom now. Everything is good. Everything is great. I've got wisdom. Let me tell you, all you people, what the best thing for your life is. Now, you've got to pursue wisdom on a daily basis. And that's what Daniel and his friends do. Look at verse 17 of Daniel chapter 1. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And at the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, and the chief of eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them. And among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, listen to this, because no one was found in the same, therefore they stood before the king. Look at verse 20. And in every matter of wisdom and understanding, about which the king inquired of them being plural, that's important, them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all of his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. So not only does Daniel and his friends ask, in light of who we are, in light of where we are, in light of what God has called us to, is this the wise thing to do? But they also pursue wisdom together. Like, notice, like, the plural in that sentence, or in that verse 20, it matters. The king would inquire of them. He found them 10 times better. Later, Daniel's going to go to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah and ask them to pray together so that Daniel can know what to say about a certain dream. And so Daniel pursued wisdom in the context of community. Let me say that again. Daniel pursued wisdom in the context of relationship and community. And if we're going to pursue that type of wisdom, we need to have relationships in our life that spur us on to search out for that type of wisdom. You see, wisdom and Christian growth and maturity has never been described as a solo sport. It's always a team game. Like Titus chapter 2 mentions the same thing. Don't turn there, but listen. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith and love and in steadfastness. Older women, likewise, are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good and train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, like the word of God may not be reviled. Likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled, show yourself in all respects, to be a model of good works, and in your teaching show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may not be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us. You see, the Bible has always talked about this pursuing of wisdom, this pursuing of relationship, always in the same vein. Older men teach younger men. Older women teach younger women. And that's where wisdom is found. So in 2006, we were at Presbyterian Hospital in Plano, Texas. We were going in to have a birthday, my first daughter, in July, July 26th. Yeah, tomorrow. July, I had to remind myself, July 26th. And I remember, like, Lindsay had to have a C-section. And they took Brooke away for an hour or two and then rolled her into the hospital room that we were staying in. They rolled her in, checked our bands to make sure they matched, and then left. I looked at my wife and kind of panicked. I was like, what do we do now? And so literally, the nurse was leaving. I looked at her, kind of panicked. I got up, walked to the door, opened the door, and the nurse was about halfway down the hallway to the next nurse's station. I said, hey, ma'am, what do we do now? Like, this is a 2006 model. I don't see the, you know, the owner's manual down there. I don't know what's going on, so what happens next? So she laughs, comes in, and we begin to, like, change her diaper and try to feed her and all those things. I'm like, okay, we can figure this out. At Brooke's year birthday party, Lindsay was pregnant with twins. So we had three kids under the age of two. It was a glorious moment, you know, glorious time in our life. Don't remember a lot of it, but it was nice. You know, it was great. Like, we just blow through stages. We don't go through them. We just blow through them. And so I remember about 4 or 5 years old being very overwhelmed. You know, Brooke's not eating, you know, they're boycotting all, you know, Disney, you know, I don't know what to do with all of our time now, you know, things like that. And I remember thinking, hey, like, their problems aren't just going to get easier, they're just going to get more complex. And so I remember just being a little overwhelmed in parenting and feeling like I'm in over my head, drowning a little bit. And I remember just asking the Lord, God, what do I need to do? And the Lord answered, just gave me this idea. And he was like, hey, you should go find some kids that you think turned out great and then go talk to the dad and just ask him to meet with you. I was like, that sounds like a good idea. I was a little intimidated, though, you know, because no one likes to admit you're weak or you need help or, like, you need to grow some. And so I just remember, like, asking the Lord, well, who is it? One day at church, a guy named Steve walks by. And he's like, that's the guy. I'm like, okay, I'd known Steve's kids for a long time. I was their youth pastor when I was in college. And then when I came back, their kids were just moving to college. And they seemed to like love the Lord and like be normal, you know. And so I was like, okay, I want to talk to him. So I called Steve and I was like, Steve, this may sound weird, but could we meet like once a month for a few months and you just tell me everything you did with your kids? Because I'm kind of drowning right now, like to raise them. And you know what he said? He said, yes. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I didn't think he would say yes, but he said yes. And so for the next 6 months or so, we met once a month just talking about the things that he did with his kids. Do I do all of them? No. I think some things are kind of weird that he did, to be honest with you. But I thought a lot of it was really helpful. He gave me great perspective. He's like, hey, it's okay that your kids aren't eating at dinner. Just don't let them eat a snack before they go to bed, and I promise the next day they'll eat. I'm like, that's brilliant. Why didn't I think of that? You know, and then he's like, hey, yeah, like, so this is how we dealt with music. This is how we handle the things that they read and extracurricular activities. And it was really helpful. And I got to say, hey, I don't understand this. Help me understand this more. Or, hey, I don't get this. And he would elaborate more. But we pursued wisdom together. Together. And you know what? Like, there are other people. Like, there are things in business that I have no idea what to do. And then I'm like, okay, I need to figure out how to build this department or build this team. And I'll be like, well, who builds that team? Like, what believer do I know that has built that team really well? And I'll call and be like, hey, can we go to lunch? And sometimes they say no. But more often than not, they say yes. And the best conversations I've had have been with people. The best wisdom I've gained, selfishly, is from people that are older than me, that are a few steps ahead of where I've been, but we could pursue wisdom together. That's why the church is so important. So that older men can teach younger men. Older women can teach younger women how to navigate life. Navigate those wisdom issues. And so the questions that I want to leave us with are this. Will you ask yourself, in light of who I am, in light of where I am, in light of what God has called me to, is this the wise thing for me to do? Will you just ask that question when a major decision comes up? And then secondly, are there people in your life that you can go after wisdom with? Are there people in your life that you can pursue wisdom with? And if there isn't, would you find somebody? Would you drop your guard, be a little weird, and say, hey, can we meet? Can we talk? Because life's not designed to be alone. It's designed to be lived together. And I actually think that with COVID, that to me has been the hardest part, is we've isolated ourselves for good reason. And we've isolated ourselves because we've been told, hey, to be safe, we should do this. But hopefully now, as we're coming on the back end of this, I pray, it's time to pursue back again those relationships. It's time to pursue again that type of wisdom. And so will you pursue it? Will you pursue it? That's my hope for us, is that we would be people just like Daniel, who are known to be men of great wisdom and women of great wisdom. And we would leave this place changed because we asked ourselves some questions. And we pursue wisdom together. Pray with me. God, thanks for your word. Thanks for the time that we get to look at it. And God, I don't know what everyone's facing in this room. I don't know the wisdom issues that are happening right now. But God, I pray as we go through them and as we navigate them, you would remind us to ask ourselves, is this the wise thing for me to do? And then God, secondly, that you would put people in our lives that we can pursue wisdom and discipleship with. God, not for our glory, not so that life's easier, but God, so that you can be given much glory. So God, we love you and we trust you. We pray that you would move in a mighty way. Praise in your son's name. Amen.